And this week, we will be continuing what we started last week. We're going to be talking about the second title of H.R. 748, or the CARES Act, a.k.a. $2 trillion damn dollars. This is
Lessons from the Screen.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not anything that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. And as always, you are welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC.org. PAX Inc. is a black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at PAXINC.org. Again, that's www.PACTSINC.org. Go ahead and check them out. There are a bunch of things you could do on the website. Show your support for them, because they continue to show their support for you. And without further ado, we're going to go ahead and jump right into Title II of the CARES Act, $2 trillion damn dollars. We still trying to figure out what $2 trillion look like. So let's keep on digging into it. So Title II is actually broken into three subtitles. And we're going to be getting into the first one in this show. The first is labeled the Unemployment Insurance Provisions and may be cited as the Relief for Workers Affected by Coronavirus Act. It establishes the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance program for people that are not eligible for regular unemployment compensation and extended benefits under state and federal law, or the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation, which we will be talking about later. The individual must also self-certify that they are able to work in order to get on these programs and are available to work and would be available to work were it not for a diagnosis of COVID-19, or were it not for them experiencing symptoms of COVID-19, or were it not for them seeking a medical diagnosis of COVID-19, or having a household member that has been diagnosed with COVID-19, or is providing care for a family member or household member that has been diagnosed with COVID-19, or has a child or other person that they have to care for. They can't attend school or other facilities because of direct closures related to COVID-19, which prevent the person from working, or the person is unable to reach the place of employment because of quarantine or being advised to self-quarantine because of COVID-19, or a death that has caused a person to become the head of household that has been caused by COVID-19, or they had to quit their job because of COVID-19, causing the place of employment to close, or if they were self-employed and seeking part-time employment, but doesn't have sufficient work history and has the ability to telework with pay, or is receiving paid sick leave or other paid leave benefits. Whew, that was a lot. So if you fall in any of those categories, then unemployment benefits, there may be some for you. Now, this only covers the weeks of unemployment or partial employment caused by COVID-19 from January 27th, 2020 through to December 31st, 2020, but not longer than 39 weeks. And the Secretary of Labor is required to establish a process for assistance under this section the date this law is enacted. Now, the benefits offered under this section are equal to the standard unemployment benefits in a given location under a given circumstances, and assistance made under this section have their federal waiting period waived as long as state law permits. They can be dispersed immediately. And there is a week-long waiting period. So that waiting period is waived under this section of unemployment compensation. Now, the federal government can partner with the state if the Secretary of Labor feels like the state has an adequate system in place for administering the assistance through state agencies. States will pay out the amount and be paid 100% of the amount paid out to unemployment claims from the federal government, so they would be reimbursed 100%, in addition to any administrative fees necessary to process applications via online or through telephone instead of in person. Now, federal payments to states can be made either in advance or as a reimbursement as determined by the Secretary of Labor. And while the frequency, timing, and amount of payments are at the sole discretion of the Secretary of Labor, estimates made on the methodology and determining the amount of the total payments require an agreement between the state and the Secretary of Labor. Now, I'm going to say this, and this is going to be a reoccurring theme with a lot of this unemployment stuff, because the Secretary of Labor has a lot of power to determine when and how and the frequency that states are being reimbursed if they opt into this program. And the troubling part about that for me is that in this hyper politicized environment that we exist in, who's to say that preferential treatment won't be given to certain states because of the political affiliation of the governor of that state, which would essentially put certain states that aren't in a favorable political association or a favorable political alignment under a hardship that is unnecessary and unjust. And I know that that's not something that people are considering or thinking about right now, but it's something that immediately came to my mind when I started reading through this and reading about all of the power the Secretary of Labor had with regards to these agreements made with the state. Especially when you consider the disparity being made between being able to issue out advanced payments and being able to issue out reimbursements. And we all know that it's a much different situation when you get an advance that you're spending versus you having to spend your own money first and then getting comp for that at some later date is yet to be determined. That dynamic in and of itself is troubling. But then when you look at the frequency and all of the other things that the Secretary of Labor would have the power to affect at the sole discretion of that office, I got problems with that. I'm going to just be honest. I have real problems with that and the way that that will play out. And I know that the Office of the Inspector General is supposed to be there. But let's be honest. The Office of the Inspector Generals all across the federal government have kind of been taking a hit, especially with the most recent occurrence of the Inspector General being basically fired for doing his job. And that's how, you know, that's we go back to the impeachment for that scenario. But I mean, the Inspector General was doing their job. The impeachment happened. There was no conviction, even though there was an impeachment. And then the Inspector General got fired for doing their job. So I don't have a lot of faith in Inspector Generals on the federal level anymore, that they will continue to do their job, because they should, in theory, be protected from doing it, from any sort of repercussions that might result from them doing their job. But they're not. And they see that they're not. And I don't have any sort of recourse that I don't have any sort of doubt, should I say, that the Secretary of Labor or anybody in a high official right now, especially in this administration, wouldn't politicize the power that they have and the ability that they have to affect the states. I feel like this stuff should be coded into policy in such a way as to not give this much power and discretion to one person or even one office. It's just too much right now. It needs to be equal across the board. Everybody needs to get the same treatment. It can't be at the discretion of the Secretary of Labor. I don't like that. Continuing on. Funds in the extended unemployment compensation account of the unemployment trust fund will be used to make payments to states. The Secretary of Labor can also transfer unappropriated general funds to the compensation fund without limits as long as the Secretary estimates that the funds will be necessary and those funds will not need to be repaid. The Secretary of Labor will from time to time certify that the Secretary of the Treasury for payment to each state and sums payable to the state. disaster unemployment assistance should not conflict with this. And if it does, then the provisions of the disaster unemployment assistance take the lead. Now, there's a lot I don't like about that, what I just read either. There's a whole lot I don't like about this section, especially with regards to the Secretary of Labor being able to transfer funds around, those funds not needing to be repaid. And what the hell does time to time mean? Like, what kind of time frame is that? The Secretary of Labor will from time to time certify to the Secretary of Treasury? The hell is that? What is that like from week to week, day to day, month to month? The hell does that mean? I don't know. So now the next section focuses on emergency unemployment relief for governmental entities and nonprofit organizations, and it allows the Secretary of Labor to issue clarifying guidance to allow states to interpret their state unemployment compensation laws in a way that would allow maximum flexibility to reimbursing employers with regards to timely payment and assessment of penalties and interest pursuant to state laws. It also allows for the transfer of federal funds to states for the exclusive reimbursement of governmental entities and other organization amounts paid into the state unemployment fund. Now, this section covers March 13th through December 31st, 2020. Now, I got another problem with this section, because to me, and I could be wrong, I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I've read it, but I'm not a constitutional lawyer. That's the only way to say it. But to me, this section seems like federal overreach. This seems unconstitutional. And here's why I say that. It says the Secretary of Labor can issue clarifying guidance to allow states to interpret their state unemployment compensation laws in a way that would allow maximum flexibility. Blah, 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 blah. I have issue with the Secretary of Labor, the federal Secretary of Labor, the federal government issuing guidance that allows states to interpret their laws in a different way than they have been interpreted historically in that state. To me, that seems like something that the federal government should not be able to do. To be able to go in and say, yes, I know that your state laws say this, your state constitution says this, but you should interpret it like this. That way you can do these things, which you may or may not have previously been able to do without even changing any of the wordage of the law, any of the verbiage in policy. That does not sound right to me. It seems like the way to interpret, from my understanding, and again, I could be wrong, from my understanding, it seems like the way state ordinances and policies and laws are interpreted is dependent upon that state, the judicial system in that state, the precedent set by that state, things that are involved in policy and interpretation within that state. It doesn't seem like it should be right or possible, and I've never read anything that indicated that it was right or possible for the federal government to tell a state that it should interpret its own laws in a way that is different from the way that state has previously been interpreting their own laws. And then for the sake of allowing maximum flexibility to reimbursing employers with regards to timely payment and assessment of penalties and interest pursuant to state laws, everything about this seems wonky to me. It definitely seems like it's to the benefit of corporations and business entities. Not that I'm totally against that, especially when the entity is a small business or a mom and pop shop. But this seems like something that's going to be taken advantage of tremendously by major corporations in order to be able to save some money on paying unemployment unemployment taxes or unemployment interest rates or any sort of unemployment expenses that they might derive. This seems like a way of allowing them to get around that. And I am against, I'm going to just be honest with you, I'm against any sort of assistance being given that allows corporations that make hundreds of millions to billions to, in this case, we could say being worth trillions. All of the companies that are just huge, making enormous amounts of profit. I don't feel bad for those companies. They have enough money. They should have enough money. If they don't have enough money, and that's what people are always telling, like regular people, you need to have enough money to be able to survive with no income for 6 months to a year. That's what they say. Companies should be in that same boat. And so my view with this whole pandemic thing is to look out for the people, not necessarily the corporations who have, in my opinion, a lot of them have gotten over on the people all the way up into this run up. And now they're getting their handouts and they're getting their payments and they're getting the things that they need before the people are actually getting what they need. And this reads like another example of that happening, in my opinion. And I go back, I'll say it one more time before I move on. The fact that the federal government is going to say that we are going to issue guidelines that will allow you to interpret your laws differently without changing the wordage or the verbiage used in said law is disturbing to me. It is disturbing. Now, I'm not saying anything's going to come of it. It might not mean anything, but on principle, it's disturbing to me. It seems wrong. And I haven't read anything that suggests that it's legal. And again, I could be off base here. And if I am, it still seems wrong, but I'll accept that I'm wrong. But, you know, you got to show me, because I've been looking. I don't see anything. So the next section covers emergency increases in the unemployment compensation benefits. And this increase has to be opted into by the state and can be left by the state after providing 30 days written notice. So if they provide 30 days written notice to the Secretary of Labor to terminate the agreement, they can leave willy-nilly, no strings attached. Now, the agreement mandates that the state agencies will make regular compensation payments to people equal to what they would get under state law, plus an additional $600 for federal pandemic unemployment compensation. Now, payments are at the discretion of the states and can be made in conjunction with regular payments or separately, but they must still be paid on the same weekly basis. Changes to state unemployment computations that happened after January 1st, 2020 will not affect the amount of money offered by this agreement, and the states will be reimbursed the $600 of the federal pandemic unemployment compensation and any administrative expenses caused by the agreement. Now, reimbursements are to be paid to the state at the discretion of the Secretary of Labor, who also has to certify from time to time. There we go again. To the Secretary of the Treasury for payments made to each state. The general fund transfers from the Treasury without limit are appropriated for these expenses, which apply to unemployment beginning on the date of the agreement, the date that the state comes into agreement with the federal government, and ending on or before July 31st, 2020. Fraud or causing another to commit fraud is a prosecutorial offense under Section 1001 of Title 18, which says that it can be punished by no more than 5 years in prison or a fine. And the overpayments or other non-entitled payments will need to be repaid to the state. Now, repayment can be waived if the state determines that the payment wasn't the fault of the individual or if the repayment would be contrary to equity and good conscience. Now, the state can recover payments by making deductions to future unemployment claims, but only after notice and opportunity for a fair hearing has been given to the individual and a final determination has been made. Income from pandemic unemployment compensation isn't counted when determining income for Medicaid or the CHIP program, and the CHIP program is the Children's Health Insurance Program. Now, the next section authorizes full federal funding of the first week of compensable regular unemployment for states with no waiting week. And this program has the same framework and structure of the last section regarding state unemployment compensation partnering with the federal program. However, it allows for individuals to be paid for the first week of regular unemployment without waiting a week, allowing compensations to begin near immediately. And again, the next section allows the state to hire emergency staff on a non-competitive basis in order to quickly process applications and claims. And then we move into the specifics of the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program, and it works similar to the other compensation programs that we've talked about with regards to states entering and leaving the agreement. It provides benefits for those people mentioned earlier, in addition to the people who have used up all their benefits. And the people I mentioned earlier were all of that COVID-19 related stuff. Now, the amount of payment for this program is, again, what we referred to earlier, the unemployment benefits plus an additional $600. And extended benefits that someone might be eligible for under the state plan can't be dispersed or can't be paid out until after the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Funds have been exhausted for the individual. Now, the states are responsible for creating accounts for individuals receiving Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation that contains 13 times the average weekly benefit, which should cover that person's compensation for the year. I don't have a whole lot of problem with everything that I just went over. I go back to I don't really like the Secretary of Labor having as much power as he has with regards to discretion of funds and agreements and when things will work out and how things will work out. I do think that should be processed out and mechanized for in policy to allow for equity and to allow for simplicity and to allow for the average person to be able to understand what's going to happen in their state. With regards to federal funds, I think when you're dealing with federal funds, having federal programs that are the same across the nation makes total sense versus having someone have to read about what the federal government has said and then having to go and find out how their state has implemented such a program. I think that causes a lot of confusion, unnecessary confusion. But beyond that, I really don't have any problem with anything listed in terms of unemployment compensation. I take issue with the time to time. And I do take issue with whether or not the Office of the Inspector General will be able to check into or would even be willing to check into the accounts that are supposed to be created for people that are claiming unemployment compensation and making sure that those accounts are maintained at the appropriate levels so that those people can receive uninterrupted compensation benefits for their unemployment. But that all goes right back into what I was saying earlier, so I'm not want to belabor or drag that out. Now, the next section authorizes temporary financing of short-time compensation payments in states with programs. Now, like the other programs, the money distributed by the state is 100% covered by the federal government. Short-time compensation. So short-time compensation is a program designed to avert layoffs by allowing employers to cut hours for all staff, lowering wage expenses, and the wages can get some compensation from the government to cover the loss in wages. Now, this law has similar guidelines to the unemployment benefits discussed earlier. However, it does require the accounts created for the individuals to have 26 times the weekly paid amount instead of 13 times for unemployment. And agreements and grants for short-time compensation are also allowed for and follow the same guidelines as listed for the unemployment agreements and grants. And the funds appropriated for short-time pay programs are transferred from the general funds as well, just like the unemployment funds, and an additional $200 million with other funding being appropriated through the use of calculations. Now, a report has to be generated by the state that shows the number of estimated averted layoffs caused by the short-time compensation programs and the number of participating employers and workers and anything else that the Secretary of Labor deems is appropriate. Now, this just is what it is, okay? If your employer cuts your hours in order to save the business, you can apply for short-time compensation. And it that's a program that you're going to have to look into, because outside of appropriating more funds for it and allowing for the federal government to 100% reimburse short-term compensation payments, it really isn't any guidelines. And that's probably because if your state already has short-term compensation payments benefits program, then they don't want to interfere with that. So I get that on this end. But I, once again, I still have issue with the Secretary of Labor having as much power as he does. Now, especially with the ability to transfer money around the way they give power to, I understand the need for flexibility and to allow those things to be able to happen, to be able to respond quickly to things that are going on. But it still rubs my spine wrong. It ain't no other way to say it. It makes me feel tingly in a bad way. Now, $50 million are also appropriated for the cost of administering the waiver to the 7-day waiting period for benefits under the Railroad Unemployment Program. Now, enacting the waiver and the processes and mechanisms necessary for the waiver to come into effect are the responsibility of the Railroad Retirement Board. $425 million is appropriated to cover the cost of recovery benefits under the enhanced benefits provided to the Railroad Unemployment Insurance Act. Now, the enhanced benefits amount to an additional $1,200 to covered individuals, and the time frame for the railroad benefits is also extended until December 31st, 2020. And $25 million is appropriated to the Department of Labor Office of the Inspector General for audits, investigations, and other oversight activities. And so that is essentially the first subtitle, subtitle A of Title II. And next week, we are going to be getting into subtitle B, which looks at rebates and other individual provisions. And like I said, this is 850 pages. We're going to be at this for the next few weeks, maybe even the next couple months, easy. Unless I can find time to get a bunch of extra shows done, it's just going to be a while. But this is, in my opinion, important enough. I mean, this is $2 trillion. And this money is going to have to be recouped from somewhere. And so it is important that we start paying attention to where the money is going and what is happening once it gets there. And so I think that right now this supersedes everything else. Even if the pandemic were to end tomorrow, I would still be covering this. If the pandemic were to somehow get, 5 to 10 times worse, I would still be covering this, because this is $2 trillion and it's going to outlive the pandemic. It's significant. So with that being said, I already said what I had to say about the sections, so I will see you next week on the next episode of Lessons from
the Screen. What we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
I want to thank you guys once again for listening to Lessons from the Screen. I want to ask you guys to go to, if you have an Android device, go to the Google Play Store, type in Freedom Train Radio. You'll see the logo of the train. Download the app, get the app. It'll keep you up to date on all of the shows and everything else that's going on here at the Freedom Train Network. Also, head on over to www.freedomtrainradio.com and check out all the shows. Leave comments, leave reviews. If you want to reach us or say anything to us, that's the best way to do it. Because if you just reach out through your social media, your a podcast listening app or YouTube or whatever, we don't check all of those things, but we do check the website. So go there. Also, I just want to thank you guys once again for tuning in, and see you next week. Let me know what you think about the show you just listened to. Let me know if you agree, disagree, you felt like I missed something, whatever it is, just holla at your boy, and I will see you next week or whenever the next show comes out. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show again, hit us up on the Freedom Train Radio website. and let us know that you're interested in sponsoring a particular show or the entire network.